Welcome to the Behind the Sports Medicine podcast, proudly sponsored by AJR Sports Science and Healthcare Consulting. AJR offers top-tiered services in sports science analytics, healthcare consulting, and leadership development. Learn more at ajrsportsscience.com. I'm your host, Andrew Rizza, an athletic trainer with over 25 years of experience in physical therapy and school athletics. I started the podcast to dive into the evolving world of sports medicine, physical therapy, athletic training, and sports science.
And I'm your co-host, Cameron Roth, a hand and upper extremity surgeon based in Phoenix and a consultant for MLB's Chicago White Sox. I'm excited to team up with my good friend Riz to explore everything from surgery, rehab, performance, and mindset. Now, on to the show.
Hi, everybody. Welcome to this week's Behind the Sports Medicine podcast. This week, I have Dr. Kai Mithoffer, orthopedic surgeon at the Boston Bone and Joint Institute in Waltham, Massachusetts. Dr. Mithoffer is a board-certified orthopedic surgeon specializing in orthopedic surgery and orthopedic sports medicine. After medical school in Germany, he received his residency training in the Harvard Orthopedic Residency Program. Followed by residency, Dr. Mithoffer completed a fellowship in orthopedic trauma at Harvard and the prestigious Sports Medicine Shoulder Surgery Fellowship at the Hospital for Special Surgeries in New York. Dr. Mithoffer, thanks for coming on today. I appreciate it.
Yeah, my pleasure, Andrew.
So our conversation today is going to revolve around the workman's compensation or work comp patient, or as I refer to them, as the industrial athlete, because I feel that there are a lot of people out there that have injuries that are related to work, and those people still need to go back to work to be able to provide for their families. Just like if an athlete was on the field trying to, you know, get back to be able to play, we're going to do the same thing for these populations. And we see quite frankly, a lot of these in our practice. And Dr. Mithoffer is one of the orthopedic surgeons in the area that is primarily responsible for a lot of the people that we do see. So who better than go to the source, Dr. Mithoffer?
Yeah, thanks, Andrew. No, I agree. I think the analogy of the industrial athlete, I think with my sports medicine background, I'm trained in sports medicine, you know, fellowship. I think there's a lot of overlap between what we do for these patients and how we address things. And I think the ultimate goal, you know, for our athlete, the regular athlete, is to get them back to sport. And I think the ultimate goal for the industrial athlete similarly is to get them back to work. So, and the challenges along the way, they're sometimes similar, sometimes different, but there is a lot of overlap. And I think coming from a sports background, working with athletes really helps kind of with a mindset understanding what steps to take, how to systematically approach these patients to get them back to their, you know, on the field, you know, experience back to work.
Yeah. And I did a little bit of base research before this conversation today, and the U.S. Bureau of Labor and Statistics reported that in 2022, there was 2.8 million episodes of work-related injuries that were reported by employers, which was up 7.5% from 2021. But in 2023, there was a decrease of 8.5% to 2.6 million reported. Now, the question I think is probably, if we dive a little deeper, is that because there are less people in the workforce, or people are now maybe taking care of themselves a little bit better and don't have as many demands? So I think there's a little more research that I have to look into, but it's a good little stat to start with, I think, to kind of know that, hey, there are a lot of people that get injured and a lot of people that do need help to go back to work.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think out of those statistics, you can also read that about a third, you know, of those injuries are actually musculoskeletal injuries. So the orthopedic part of these injuries, the slips and trips and falls, you know, repetitive use, overuse injuries are a huge part of this. And I agree. I think some of the reduction that you just mentioned might be from people working from home. You know, I think mm-hmm. they're in a less demanding environment. There's less commute, you know, because some injuries happen on the commute actually. So I think that can reduce the injuries. But I think there's also efforts, I think, from companies like bigger industrial companies, as well as, you know, other, you know, physical therapy companies like ATI, for example, to build programs that can help patients prevent these injuries. You know, just go to the source, do an you know, education of the patients, what to avoid, stretching programs, strengthening programs, ergonomic evaluations and optimizations. So there's a lot of, you know, very positive work that has been done. And I think it's more and more being done to prevent these injuries, which I think is the best way to address them.
Yeah, 100% agree. And if we can provide that, then we're going in the right direction. What inspired you? You know, when you started out, I just gave a brief description of how you got to where you are today. What was the inspiration for you to become a physician and quite frankly, orthopedics? When was it in your training that you decided, hey, orthopedics is for me?
Yeah, I think physician, I always liked biologics and, you know, human anatomy. But I think the first exposure, I think, to the life of a physician I had, to my pediatrician, actually, you know, who I really admired, who was a fantastic person, very, very competent, very empathetic person. And I always kind of find him very inspiring and wanted to be like him when I was young. And then, you know, the specific move toward orthopedics came from my sports career, you know, primarily soccer player, and having injuries, you know, going through these injuries, learning about injuries. And I actually had a very, very special experience. I had knee surgery, you know, when I was 18 and was in the hospital. And the doctor who did the surgery on me, he was one of the German soccer national team foundation. Like talked to me a little bit afterwards, and he noticed that I was interested in medicine and, you know, orthopedics, and that was something I was thinking about. And so the next day he came and brought me actually a surgical technique guides of different surgeries, you know, operation, you know, how operations are done, anatomy books. And I was like lying in the hospital reading these books, and it was actually really, really positive, and it really inspired me, you know, get more information, dig deeper into orthopedics specifically, and reinforce my interest in orthopedics. And very interestingly, down the road, you know, down the road 20, 25 years later, I was actually invited to give a lecture for the German Soccer Foundation. And he was actually in the audience, so I met him again, and we reconnected since then. It's been really a tremendous positive experience for me to be connected with him again.
Yeah, that's pretty amazing. I think a lot of us, if you asked how we got into what we're into, and a lot of it is revolving around, if we're in medicine, we were injured as an athlete, right? Yeah. And how do we get to that next level of helping people? And we found that the people helping us made a difference in our lives, and that's how we end up getting into where we are, what we're doing today. So that's a great story. What was the driving factor for you on moving into working with workman's compensation patients? I know it's definitely different in some regard to traditional orthopedics, but not so much, right? But you're dealing with someone that needs to get back to work for their livelihood in a heavy demand position at some instances. But what was it that drew you to it?
Yeah, I think on the analogy, like we mentioned already earlier with, you know, the sports medicine world and the similar approaches. Mm-hmm. But I also always look for challenge. I like challenging situations, you know, and the work comp situation is certainly challenging for multiple reasons. I like, you know, cartilage repair, things like that. So they're more complex situations, and I like solving all the different puzzles and optimizing things around the patient to, you know, have optimal outcomes even under these complex and challenging situations. And that's kind of a natural draw that developed towards the work or work-related situation. And then, you know, growing up, you know, and playing soccer in Germany is a very blue collar sport, you know, so I have a lot of friends actually from the blue collar world who I saw go through, you know, problems in the past. So I connect with that kind of environment and those situations and the frustrations that these patients can go to. And I just want to help them, you know, optimize the outcome, get them back, because I know it's such a, not just physically, you know, from a medical standpoint affecting them, but also from, it affects their families, affects, you know, their psyche. You know, it's really a complex situation. It's really hard for them to navigate the system because the work comp system is quite complex, even for physicians to navigate, but it's even harder sometimes for the patient. So I think that helping them by what I can do to optimize the system, you know, that really I found I could really make a difference in these patients. So I found it very satisfying and challenging at the same time.
What are some of the challenges that you come up against when it comes to that type of patient? I mean, if we look at just, for instance, a general orthopedic patient that comes in with a rotator cuff repair, I mean, you're going to see them post-surgery, you know, a week, you're going to see them 3 months, 6 months, a year, and you may not see them again. What's the challenge that you deal with when it comes to where the workman's comp with maybe the same type of pathology? Is there, you're dealing with a bunch of other people. I mean, you're dealing with case managers, you're dealing with employers, you're dealing with the patient themselves and their families. What are some of the big things or hurdles you have to kind of get through in order to make sure that their care gets what it needs and it goes smoothly?
Yeah, as I said, it's a complex situation in terms of who's involved in the care, the whole team, who's managing the care, understanding, you know, what the work is like, what the work conditions are like, what aspects of work led to the injury or might have been involved in injury. And then using that information to safely get them back. I think that in general, these patients are afraid of going back to work because of their work injury situation. And that, again, another analogy to sports, you know, the concept of kinesiophobia, and that we see in athletes, you know, I think the same thing happens for work injury patients, you know. And I think that there are certain things in the system, you know, that are built into the system, particularly in Massachusetts, that make it difficult. You know, for example, mandatory utilization reviews, for example, which I think I intended very well, but practically make it hard to sometimes manage the patient efficiently because they really delay the ability to treat the patient. And delays, you know, as you know, have been shown to be the consistently that one factor that limits return to work activities. Once the patient gets out of work for a certain amount of time, they're just disengaged, they are much less likely to come back to their work situation. And I think part of that delay in the system is, you know, from some of the things that have been established as sometimes mandatory steps for patients, which unfortunately are, again, not helping the patients, even though they're well-intended.
Yeah, you know, I have to say I've had a couple conversations with patients that have had delayed advancement in their care. So they've gotten injured, they've been evaluated, they've gone through therapy, then they find out they need to have a surgical procedure. They feel like the employer has done them wrong. They feel like they're very standoffish to return to work because of that fear for going back. Just like if an athlete tore their ACL on the soccer field, the biggest challenge you have is the mental component of putting them back to play. So how do we deal with that with a workman's comp patient? And I feel like you still need to have that in the back of your mind, that part of that care team should be the orthopedist, the physical therapist, the care manager, but also a sports psychologist that's going to help them if they need that go back to work discussion. And if they can't get back to the level of work they need to get back to, what else is there available to them in their profession or with their company that can put them to work to be able to provide for their family, so they're not considered disabled, right, for the rest of their life, which is also another big thing for anxiety, depression, and all the other stuff we're trying to care for. So again, there's this big, huge gamut of things we have to worry about with the patient. It's not just getting them physically ready. It's all the other things that come with it. So,
we talked about the delays, and I think that the delays are not helpful for the recovery. You know, clearly, if you brought the example of a rotator cuff tear, you know, so if a patient has a rotator cuff tear, we're waiting several weeks to just get an MRI scan, and then we're waiting for the utilization review. Then the patient is 3 months out, then you have to get, you know, if, like, say, worst case scenario, surgery is needed, you know, you have a big tear. Tear has been sitting there for months before you can actually get in there. So the tissue quality isn't as good. There's retraction oftentimes. So it makes it harder to fix, increases the re-tear rate, increases, you know, the time to return to work. So it's not helping the situation from a clear medical standpoint. You know, and I think that's the frustrations that are in the system. And I found that what we can do from a medical provider standpoint is to communicate well. You know, I think that really makes a huge difference by incorporating everybody that's involved, all the stakeholders, including the case managers, including the adjusters and PTs and, you know, the employer, and to understand what are the situations, you know, and, you know, where is the patient right now? What does he need to go back to? Educate each other about, you know, what each other's point of view is and what we're trying to achieve, and then work together on it, you know. And I think that's one thing that I, in my opinion, has really, really helped, you know. And from my standpoint, I want to have people call me directly or text me directly, email me directly, so I know what the update is for the patient, so we can, again, fine-tune things and optimize things in the most time-efficient fashion. And the other thing is, again, having a network of people that you trust and you know how to work with. And one thing that we've done at you know, Boston Bone and Joint Institute is have our annual work injury conference, which I think has been helpful for education, but also brings a lot of those stakeholders together to communicate openly and build those lines of communications so that then can help helpful to facilitate the management of the patient afterwards.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that's great. I think the conference has been fantastic. I went to the one last year. This year, I couldn't make it to the conference. What are some of the things that you think are improving the ability to move along these cases a little faster? I know you said communication and being able to communicate with the stakeholders. Is it the research? Is it providing the insurance companies or the employers or the adjusters or the case managers the information so they can make a better informed decision for that patient so they don't get carried way out, you know, longer than we like? Because you had made a great point on tissue retraction and tissue healing. We know that if we're not taking care of the tissue in a prompt fashion, their recovery rate decreases, right? And their retail rate increases or could increase. So how do we make that decision and show them the information to understand, like, hey, we need to make, this is the objective findings. We need to have some imaging to be able to provide external information for us to be able to tell us, yes, this is truly a tear that needs to be fixed, instead of waiting. How do we advance that to the point where it is now?
Yeah, I think part of that is good documentation from a physician standpoint. I think good documentation helps kind of describing not just like the standard surgical note, but also kind of describing why that is recommended, being a little bit more explicit in, uh-huh, in, you know, the thought process. So like the adjuster, for example, who's not necessarily has no medical training, can understand the reasoning, you know. And I think once they see that and, you know, the pros and cons of the different directions of treatment options, I think they can make a much more informed decision and say, okay, now we got to push this versus, okay, now I'm not sure about this. I want to have somebody else look at this, do an IME or a utilization review, which again puts a roadblock in. Again, if my experience has also been, you know, just sometimes reach directly out to each other, you know, and learn more about what they are concerned about, you know, what my concern is. And simple communication helps so much in resolving little misunderstandings of lack of information that can then kind of smooth out the process for the patient and facilitate. Yep.
Now, as you become more and more involved in this, the industrial athlete and what they're, you being a referred provider, do you feel like you're seeing more and more of those patients? You get better communicative responses from those stakeholders, and you see those things as far as cases get, I don't want to say pushed through, but moved along more quickly? Or is it case by case? Is that what it comes down to?
It's a little bit case by case. I think it depends on the stakeholders. You know, I think they're different. You know, if you talk about case managers, which are local versus case managers that are sitting somewhere in Texas, you know, and are a little bit more removed, that's a different situation. But I think, again, you just want to have a team that, and we have been very fortunate at BBJI to have a good team in the background, administrative team as well, that is able to communicate about all the little things and has a lot of experience with that. You know, so you have that support as a physician, and then you can provide the relevant information that can be helpful for those providers, you know, local or, you know, remote, to make the right decision. And I think it's extra work. It definitely takes more time and more effort. But I think it's something that, as I said, you know, it's the challenge that you want to overcome. And if you're interested in helping your patients, I think it's a natural thing to do that.
Yeah, that's great. I think having a team that can help to communicate it in the best fashion. And if that comes down to being the physical therapist they're treating pre-surgical decisions, it's also good to make sure the documentation is correct. I mean, you can't have documentation that is not, you know, you're not dotting your I's and crossing your T's, because that doesn't help the patient. And we always talk about this. It's about the patient. It's not about the therapist. It's, you know, it's about getting them back to what they need to be doing to make their life a little bit better.
Yeah. And, you know, the case managers and the adjusters, they're very busy. You know, they have a lot of cases that they're dealing with. So sometimes it's hard for them to know which one's more urgent versus not so urgent. Mm-hmm. So sometimes kind of making the extra effort in the more urgent cases makes a huge difference.
Yeah, 100%. I can't agree more. When you look at rehabilitation practices or PT practices in the area that you worked with, what are some of the things that you're looking for within that practice to work with this population? Because this population is completely different than working with just an athlete coming off the field that might have a simple ankle sprain, or, you know, a patient that has a low back strain. This is somebody that they're relying on someone that understands what they need to do to go back to work, to do the job they need to do and be successful at doing it.
I think the most important thing is experience. I think, you know, having worked with these patients, understanding again the work comp situation, how it's different from the regular patients, as you're pointing out, and knowing how to manage these patients also. You know, I think that not just the insurance and the field surrounding them, but also the hugely important part of trying to get them comfortable, let them understand they're ready to go back safely back to the job where they got injured. You know, and I think that's really a stepwise process where you know how to not just only, you know, do the physical therapy part, which is very important to do that appropriately, but also do, as you said, then the psychological management as well. And I think one thing that's really critical is setting really good short-term goals as well as long-term goals, and then kind of letting the patient meet the little short-term goals, which really hugely important for their psychological progress through this whole procedure of getting back to work, and then getting closer to that long-term, you know, and then doing similar things like we do, for example, for the regular athletes. You know, you get to a certain stage, you have completed everything that you can do in the gym, so then you can go to essentially things like on-field rehabilitation, you know, the concept of work conditioning, or what I like to say, it's return to work conditioning, you know, so getting them ready for that and those extra step. And we oftentimes see that in the regular population, you know, ACLs, for example, they get rehabilitation, and then the insurance company cuts them off, you know, but they're not fully rehabilitated, you know, for return to sport. But, you know, in the work, you know, situation, I think that really critical transition from finishing all the range of motion, strength, you know, biomechanics restoration, then going back to the work specific demands in, you know, work conditioning programs is, I think, a huge thing. And having a group or a physical therapist that's familiar with that process and how to do that efficiently for patients is a huge, hugely important part why I would send a patient there.
Yeah, and I think that's important. You know, it's work conditioning is just it's a whole different understanding of what to do with that patient. It is a return basically to sport for them. So we've been doing work conditioning in our clinic in Wellesley for the last 12 months, and we see a good amount of our work comp patients that get transitioned into our clinic in Wellesley. Because of our size of our clinic, we can actually we have a space that's big enough to be able to do the workloads that they need to be able to do. The one thing that patients don't understand is that they're not just working, say it's their shoulder, for instance, it's their total body. They need to go through an entire workload that's going to replicate a 40-hour week. So what we have to do is, you know, educate them one on, you know, you need to be here 3 to 4 days a week for 2 to 3 hours a day. We need to be able to lift, say you're someone that's a 50 to 100 pound physical demand limit, or we call PDLs. They need to be able to lift maybe 25 or 30,000 pounds over an entire day. So people see that number and they think that's outrageous. But if you took just simple math and said 3 sets of 10 at 50 pounds, that's 1,500 pounds. So to try to give them the simple math and understand, like, if we're lifting this over time, we need to get to that as a long-term goal of limitation for them. But also, how do we get them to that point with them understanding that if they have a shoulder injury, we might be doing step-ups, we might be doing lifting carries, we may be doing abdominal or core workouts, because they need to be able to perform at work. And if their employer doesn't see that they can do that, then we can't release them. The other piece that's very interesting too is that we have to do a progress note every fifth visit. So it shows that either they're progressing or declining. And then where do we make the decision to send back, talk to the adjuster, talk to the surgeon, and have that communication, which is huge. And because so they can, one, get to where they need to be, and so they understand what the process is.
No, I think that's huge. And again, talking to an employer, understanding exactly what the job entails in terms of weights, as you're saying, you know, maximum weight, repetitiveness, you know, overhead. Understanding the work environment from talking to the patient, but also to the employer, I think is hugely important. And again, the analogy, the athlete analogy, we bring the patient back to, okay, they play a little bit, but, you know, they still have to then ramp up their minutes of the game gradually too. And so there's even when they get back to work, there's a continuation process of being fully functional and, you know, getting them back to limited duty and then gradually advancing them is kind of the analogy for that in the work-related injury world. Just having a, again, systematic approach, understanding there's going to be ups and downs in that process, having been there with patients is huge. And I think that physical therapy groups like yours who deal with this on a regular basis, have a system, you know, have a good communication base, will make a, you know, night and day difference in terms of how well you can get these patients back.
Yeah, and I think physical therapists in general should understand that if they have a patient that is going back to a job post-surgery, that when we're going through work conditioning, it's the last, you know, probably 30% of their progression, so or 25%. So it might be, we're looking at 4 weeks of working with us. It could be 12 to 16 visits. They're coming in 3 to 4 times a week. We don't want to see them month three because that doesn't add up. They should be still doing therapy with you up until the point where you think that they're ready to go back to work. And we have to push them through the paces to make sure they can go back with the clearance from you, the physician, as well, like they are ready to go back. So I think that communication is huge between all the stakeholders. What is there as far as criteria that you're looking for? Do you have a different criteria for someone that might be going back to work with a heavy job description that has a rotator cuff repair or an ACL repair? Or is it strictly just biologics, the way that you normal recovery would be in your discussion with them at month 8, 9, 10, 11, 12? How does that look?
I think you really got to do it. And I'd like to do that generally. I mean, you have certain, you know, algorithms, you know, but mm-hmm. I think I'd like to still use, you know, the progression and the features that we use for progression individually based, you know, because everybody's different. Everybody's combination of injuries is different. Everybody's demands are different. Everyone's progression rate is different. You know, but I think in general, for patients to go back, I mean, you really want to make sure they have full range of motion, pain-free, and have really 100% strength in terms of demand. And then when normal biomechanics, very, very important as well, you know, for knee as well as shoulder to prevent recurrent problems. And then there's, you know, the weight, you know, that you can talk about, but is it like lifting 100 pounds once, or is it, you know, 50 pounds 20 times, you know, is this a more repetitive situation? Those are all factors that play into that. And then you have to consider in terms of how you're going to progress the patient individually for their specific job situation. And again, communication with all stakeholders, like we keep coming back to that,
yeah.
You know,
yeah.
It's hugely important. And I think when the patient sees that there's communication and everybody's on the same page and pulling in the same direction, that takes that, you know, mistrust out of the system that some of these patients have. And then they feel like well taken care of and cared for, you know, and I think that makes them way more motivated to go back to work if they feel that, like, in an environment like that. So creating that together as a team, I think is really, really important. And then again, communicating, if you start doing, okay, we're going from 20 to like 40 pounds. Okay. He's starting to have some discomfort with, you know, those exercises, then okay. Then communicate how we can modify it to temporarily adjust it. So it's not painful. It's not causing inflammation or irritation that will set him back or cause re-injury.
How do you, to communicate with therapists or anybody that's seeing patients of yours, what's the best mode of communication? So if somebody has a patient, for instance, that's going for 20 to 40 pounds, they're having pain or discomfort, or they're having pain that just doesn't make sense. Is that a discussion that you'd like to have with the therapist, or is that something where the communication between the adjuster, yourself, and the therapist, how does that work for you and make it best for the patient?
Yeah, I'm always available, you know, so I'm always happy to get a phone call, a text message, an email, and I give that information out to everybody who wants to reach out to me. And I think that's just the best way of not just avoiding delays, but also optimizing the care and avoiding significant setbacks, you know. So I think direct communication is important between humans, you know, and we all think maybe in the same way, but have different, you know, direct information that we see from working with the patients. I certainly don't see the patients as frequently as a physical therapist does. You know, if you do your work conditioning, you see them four or five times a week. You have a lot more information that's immediate than I would have. And if something happens, then I would say, okay, what kind of exercise were you doing? When that pain started, you know, to get that information directly rather than, you know, just here there was pain kind of overall, that makes a big difference in clarifying where this might have come from and to kind of ship around it and move around it and avoid it going forward.
No, I agree. I think making sure that we're communicating. I always tell young therapists that are afraid to reach out to the physician because they feel like, you know, the physician doesn't want to talk to them. I said, that's your best friend. You want to talk to the doctor because the doctor's referring you patients back. And if you're doing a good job and you're providing care for their patients that they're caring for, you're doing good by them. So you got to make sure you're communicating, either if it's email, text, phone, whatever the physician would like you to communicate with them is the best way. And having those open discussions is only going to make you better. Yeah. Understanding each other and how you work together and care for the patient is key.
Yeah, it makes me better too. You know, if I have the information that you have, if I have that, helps me make better decisions as well. So absolutely.
I mean, I remember going back and talking to Carl Gustafson, who Carl introduced me to you, it must have been 15 years ago.
Yeah, I know.
He said, you never want the doctor to learn something that you knew a month ago and you didn't tell him. Like, you want to make sure that you're communicating with the doctor, because if something goes wrong, you want to be the first person to say, hey, Dr. Mithoffer, you know, Jim Smith was in the clinic and we were doing this exercise and all of a sudden he started to get pain. How would you like to proceed with him going through his process? And you being the physician may say, hey, let's get him in right away, get him checked. If we need to do imaging, let's get some imaging. Anything could happen in that stake, right? So I think communication between you and your peers is huge. I mean, I think you need to do that day to day, and that's how you get better.
Yeah, couldn't agree more. That's maybe the most important take home message for me, this whole conversation that we're having.
Always communicate. It's always good to do. How do you see that your practice growing in this population? Do you see that you're going to continue to keep getting, you know, being more involved in this, or do you split more? Like, how does your day look or week look when it comes to work compensation versus the regular orthopedic stuff that you see?
Yeah, no, I see a lot of regular patients, you know, probably more regular patients than work comp patients, but I'm invested in those patients and I like seeing those patients. I know some docs, you know, really don't like seeing them because of that old mystery, you know, sense that work-related injuries are, these guys always malinger and you don't want to go back. And, you know, and that's really, in my experience, not true. You know, I think a lot of them are motivated to go back. They like going back. And your firefighters, for example, is a great example. They're all very motivated, sometimes over-motivated to go back. And their livelihoods are affected by being out of work. So I think it's a situation where you really going to come in and keep them on track.
Yeah.
And I like that. I like that environment and I like working. As I said, I like blue collar, you know, people and the way, you know, that they make their living, and I want to help them, you know, be successful in their life when they have an injury, you know, and that's why I've, you know, always enjoyed it with them. And I'm always happy to see patients, you know, surgical, non-surgical, doesn't matter. I just want to make sure they get better.
Yeah, that's great. And I think you can probably end all of the, I guess, the misnomers of work comp patients just by asking the question to the patient and being very, you know, personal. Is, do you want to go back to work? What's your ambition? What's your goal? It's simple questions. And I think people forget to ask those simple questions and they assume. So just asking the questions and you get the answer, and hopefully it's the right answer.
Yeah, no, I think you sense, I mean, we all have seen enough that we know some of the patients who are less motivated than the more motivated ones. And again, that day, you got to sometimes, if the less motivated ones, for me, you know, you got to find out why they're less motivated and, you know, by communicating with them and, you know, see how you can remove that, you know, lack of motivation and kind of bring them back on. And you're definitely sometimes, you know, my clinical visits with them, I sit down for a long time and I feel more like a motivational speaker than like a physician. But I think that's equally as important to understand all the background and how they are affected by this versus just the medical aspect of, you know, the injury and recovery.
Yeah, I think some of the things I lead with patients, and it's, you know, what can I do to help you? What can I do for you? And what questions do you have? Is there something that we can help you achieve that maybe you're not getting to now? So I think those key things for them make them understand that you're invested in them and it's about them. And if you do that, I think you get a good result either way.
Yeah. Yeah. I think, as you said, creating an environment where they feel like they're taken care of, they're heard, they're considered, their point of view is considered, you know, consistently, that, you know, makes a much better, not just for work comp patients, but I think also regular patients. Mm-hmm. You know, and athletes is the same way. I think there's, as I said, you know, there's a lot of fears, a lot of, you know, somebody tore his ACL on the field, you know, getting them back to play. I think that's definitely a transition. And for me, again, showing patients what they can do more and more and more, providing more and more trust in their physical abilities is the first step. and will positively affect the psychological recovery. You know, and again, having a team, we all know if you have a team that you feel, you know, we're all pulling in the same direction, that is a huge, huge deal in terms of wanting to make progress, wanting to keep pushing yourself. Because sometimes these can be very extended, you know, recoveries, and you got to keep your motivation going.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. Close out a couple last questions. One's an easy one. This one I'd like to ask most of our guests is a fun fact about themselves, something that people may not know, or, you know, things you might do outside of being a surgeon. I mean, we look at our surgeons like all they do is research and surgery, and they go home and they probably hopefully go to sleep and recover and rinse, repeat for the next day. But what are some of the things you like to do outside of your normal day?
Yeah, some of the things I like to do is do sports, you know, and, you know, tennis is one of the sports I like. Soccer, you know, I used to play a lot. But I have, you know, young kids as well. I like to spend time with them. But maybe a fun fact in general, I think, as I mentioned a little bit, that my relationship with the blue collar situation, and having been in a work situation myself, you know, when I grew up, I actually trained as a firefighter. So I know kind of the situation that this is in, how demanding that work is. And I've had colleagues there or other firefighters that saw that had injuries, and, you know, so it's I think it's a life experience that helps me, you know, in my medical situation to appreciate some of the things, how I can improve, you know, life of others that I maybe understand a little bit better.
Yeah, that's fantastic. I didn't know that about you. Carl may have mentioned something at one point, but it's always great to hear like these careers that somebody may have started and ended up somewhere else, which is pretty amazing. Did you know Carl's that he was a bodybuilder in college?
I do know that. Yes.
We always seen some
of the images. Yes.
We'd always take a picture and put it on the clinic of him. Like, just, we'd find it and put it up somewhere. And where did that come from?
Yeah.
It's always funny.
Again, it helped his career,
yeah,
you know,
100%.
In terms of how he's now and what he's made out of him, and how he can, again, take that experience to help his patients now. And he's doing obviously a fantastic job with that.
Yeah, he's amazing. And I owe a lot to him. He's a big, big mentor to me, has been for years. And I still call him on a lot of things. So he's fantastic. One last thing before I let you go, so you can enjoy your Friday. If we have someone listening that wants to get a hold of Dr. Mithoffer and wants to come see you, if it's, you know, anything from, hey, I sprained my ankle and can you see me, or someone else in the practice can see me, or, hey, listen, I've been struggling with this injury for years and I'm self-employed and I really need to get back to work. How do they get a hold of you? What's the best way?
Yeah. So, I mean, the best way is to go to, I have a website myself, and then we have the DBJI website. My website is bostonjointpreservation.com. You can get a lot of information of what kind of orthopedic medicine I do. But also then bbji.com, which is our group's website. So that's a lot of information there. And then that, if you want to make an appointment, they can usually get you in pretty quickly there as well. So I'm always happy to see and trying to get people in as quickly as possible. And I'm happy to see chronic as well as acute injuries. And I'm very fortunate to be in a great group that is very supportive and very well set up in terms of the administrative support that we have, and have fantastic the PA that I work with, who's very qualified. She's also been in orthopedics for 15 years and a lot of occupational medicine clinics as well. So she has a lot of information and experience in that particular space, but also great coordinators that, you know, very responsive and will typically turn over things very quickly.
That's fantastic. I appreciate that. Is the new center open yet or about to open? I know you guys have a new center on 128.
Yeah, yeah,
right?
We're super excited about it. I think we're moving probably in February. That's the anticipated, you know. But I've been visiting the center recently, and it started looking really beautiful inside. And we're starting to get ready to move over. It's going to be a lot of work to get over, but I think once we're in there, it's going to be fantastic for patients. Much more efficient, and, you know, I think well located for patients from the overall, you know, Boston and greater Boston area.
Yeah. Well, congratulations. Well deserved. It's going to be nice to have that space available. Are you going to have a ribbon cutting? Is there going to be something to kick it off, or?
Yeah, we'll have an open house at some point. You know, we'll definitely, you know, let everybody know when that is and make a big celebration out of it to bring everybody in.
Well, Dr. Mithoffer, thanks again. I appreciate your time. Enjoy the rest of your weekend.
Well, thanks for having me, Andrew. This is a great conversation on a great topic, and I appreciate you inviting me for it.
Yeah, thank you very much. I appreciate it. I'll talk to you soon.
Take care.
Thank you for tuning in to Behind the Sports Medicine Podcast, proudly sponsored by AJR Sports Science and Healthcare Consulting. At AJR, we are committed to offering a comprehensive range of exceptional services, including applied sports science analytics, healthcare and sports medicine consulting, and leadership and coaching development. To learn more about AJR, visit their website at ajrsportsscience.com. This is your host, Andrew Rizza.
And your co-host, Dr. Cameron Roth. If you enjoyed the content from today's episode, give us a like, leave a comment, and share on social media. You can find all of our episodes on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you listen to your podcast. You can also follow us on Instagram, YouTube, or Twitter at Behind Sports Med Podcast. And stay tuned to our next episode.